T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We had some comments from Jack Dorsey, co-founder of Twitter, St. Louis native, on with Brian Stelter on CNN. They've taken some heat for yanking people off of Twitter or suspending accounts or shutting them down temporarily based on content. And there were obviously some examples of prominent conservatives recently that have been affected by that. And here's what Jack told Stelter over the weekend on this particular thing. And one of the things that was interesting is he admits, I appreciate his candor here, he admits that he's biased, or that the folks running Twitter are left-leaning. I mean, he gets to that in here.
The president called you out for shadow banning. What is the truth around that idea?
So I think a lot of the statements behind the statement and the question behind the question is, look, shadow banning is a very widely defined term. There's not one single definition. So the definition that we found that seems to resonate with the most people is, not amplifying particular messages, or if someone puts out a tweet, hiding that tweet from everyone without that person who tweeted it knowing about it. So, but the real question behind the question is, are we doing something according to political ideology or viewpoints?
All right, so that's the question he's trying to answer here. You had Dennis Prager over the weekend saying that Facebook had deleted some of the content that he had, and I think that there was an issue with Twitter as well, but they were saying that it was a shadow banning, so that you have a censor on Facebook, or in this case Twitter, for violating their speech codes that prohibit hate speech, and then they're trying to hide that from other people. So that's what Jack's talking about here, and he goes on.
And we are not, period. We do not look at content with regards to political viewpoint or ideology. We look at behavior. And we use that behavior as a signal to add to relevance. We need to constantly show that we are not adding our own bias, which I fully admit is more left-leaning. And I think it's important to articulate our bias and to share it with people, so that people understand us. But we need to remove all bias from how we act and our policies and our enforcement.
So that's an interesting approach, because there is no doubt. I mean, if you follow Jack and you know what he's about, he's not a conservative. And I love the platform. I've been involved in Twitter in a long time. But he's saying, look, the folks, if I interpret him correctly, the folks who run the company, that we're kind of left-leaning, but we try not to influence those decisions when it comes to suspending or banning accounts. And I don't know. I know there's been a couple instances where a Twitter ban has had to be corrected, or the facts didn't come in exactly the way that they had hoped. So I thought those were very interesting comments. I'm not exactly sure where that's all going to head. I have not been shadow banned up until this point. Let's talk about Sister Mary Jo and this amazing first pitch over the weekend. Marion Catholic High School in Chicago Heights. And here's what happened. Let me have the recount here of the event. Let's see if I had this report here. Matt Piper.
The Chicago White Sox may have lost the game Saturday night, but it's what happened beforehand that had spectators in awe.
Look at this thing. A pretty good job of it. Throws it in the zone.
As heard on NBC Sports, Sister Mary Jo threw out the first pitch, and it was nearly perfect. In the zone, right over the plate, and into the catcher's glove. The sister also had a nice little arm trick up her sleeve, knocking the ball off the inside of her elbow and catching it. Even the White Sox manager jokingly asked if she would play for them. Sister Mary Jo has a habit of playing. She's a former college softball star. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Ah, you see what he did there? A habit? That was very clever. Sister Mary Jo Sobiech is with me this afternoon. She's on a whirlwind media tour. How are you?
Oh, I'm exhausted, to be honest with you, but it's been fantastic at the same time. It's been a lot of fun.
How many interviews do you think you've done so far?
I bet I did. I'm going to keep this biblical. I'm going to say about 14.
So I've thrown out a first pitch before, not quite as successfully as you, although I didn't miss the catcher's glove. But one thing that impressed me, you know, I don't know what the advice was going in. You always look confident, but people said, well, you don't want to go out to the top of the mound. And then some people said, no, don't do that. And then what happened with me here at Busch Stadium is this kid goes, he's like 12 years old. He goes out there before me. He goes to the top of the mound. So at that point, I'm obligated to go to the top of the mound. Now, I would have liked to have tried to fire one in like you did, but I think I would have really messed up. But you get up there, there's never a doubt in your mind, right?
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, don't you want to be confident? You want to know that you're going to do it well. But I'm going to be honest with you, though, I did practice.
Well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that you,
right.
It's one thing to practice, though, but there's another component. The thing that sticks out for me is when I'm running out to the mound, I'm on the big screen television in center field. So that's the image that I'm left with. And then when I did it, I got up there and I just turned around and threw it. I didn't want to think about it at all. But you threw out, what was it? Was it a fastball, a bit of a cutter? It had a little action and a sinking motion on it. I think you would have fooled a lot of major league batters with that pitch.
You know, to be honest with you, I knew that I wanted to keep it fluid. So when I went out there, I, the whole trick off my arm was to make it more realistic. Because to throw from the jump would have been awkward. So I didn't want to do that. So I kept it fluid. I did the little ball hop as if I was catching it in center field or grounding a one hop at shortstop. And then I just turned around and rifled it to the glove. You know, I wanted to be confident, but at the same time, nervous enough to keep me on my game. You know what I mean?
In the television story, I think it might have been maybe one of the ones we just played there, but they were showing you kind of warming up in the parking lot. Was that the video from that day?
Yes, it was.
Because you were throwing the heat in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Why? You know, if I'm going to throw a ball, it's going to be on a rope. I'm not rainbowing it.
No, you're not.
Come on, man.
So you played college softball or where'd you play softball?
I played high school and college softball at Vermilion Community College with Sue Johnson Northey, and then I went to transferred to St. Scholastica in Duluth, Minnesota, where I played for Bill Ross. I played shortstop, and then I played center field. And, you know, I couldn't get ribbed by my friends who are athletes and my coaches for wimping out and doing it on the grass. How many opportunities are you going to have to be on the hill in a major league ballpark? So I had to go from the rubber. I mean, come on, as an athlete, I was all in.
Absolutely. So what was the reaction after the pitch?
You know, I just kind of pointed down at him to, like, you know, as if I do that all the time, right? You got to act like, why am I surprised?
Right, I
do that all the time. So, and he came out from behind the plate and he said that was a strike. And we just kind of, you know, had a good time with it and laughed. And I had no idea that it would turn into what it has, though. But it's been a wonderful opportunity here.
Now, true or false, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the air, are you a St. Louis Cardinals fan?
I am.
Yes.
And I have one, and I'll tell you why. I have one person to blame for that, and her name is Sue Bracco. When I entered the Springfield Dominican Sisters in Springfield, Illinois, from central Minnesota, Sauk Rapids, I didn't like the Cardinals growing up.
Okay.
And because we were American League, you're National League,
right.
and Ozzie Smith, and you guys were always, you know, winning until we, I don't know if I should say this on air, if you're going to hang up on me, but we did beat you, I think it was in, was it 91 or 87?
Yeah, well,
can't remember.
Yeah, you're talking about the Royals here.
No, I'm talking about the Cardinals.
Oh, but
you're talking about
the Twins beating them or the Royals. That was
the Twins beating the Cardinals.
Yeah, 80. That was 87.
Yeah, 80.
I was very painful. I was actually living in Chicago at the time. I remember sobbing in a drunken stupor. Sorry, forgive me for my sins that night.
Oh, don't worry. Okay, go on. That's okay.
So yes, that was a tough time. So you didn't like the Cardinals. So what turned you around?
Sue Bracco turned me around.
Yeah, tell me, how did she do that?
Okay, well, I entered the community in Springfield, Illinois, the Dominican Sisters there, in 1993. And she is not a sister, but she's good friends with some of our sisters. And one of my sister friends said, you have to meet Sue Bracco. You guys would get along so great. You both have a lot in common, your love for sport. So I met her, and she's a rabid Cardinal fan. So we started going to the ball games because I love sports. And I thought, you know what? I'm not. This is not a battle between the Twins and the Cardinals. I have my American League team. Now I can have my National League team.
I think that's fair.
So, exactly. So we often go down to the ballpark, and we love Ballpark Village. We like to sit up there across the field and take in the games. We've come down for the World Series just to enjoy the atmosphere. It's a blast down there. We love it.
Well, we are, as you, I think, know, the Cardinals flagship station, Sister Mary Jo. If you want to come down, the next time you come down, I would love to take you to a game or help you get to a game. How does that sound?
Oh, I would love that, but under one condition.
Okay.
She's got to come with me.
Absolutely.
She's got to come with me.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, and I'm being sincere here. You guys come down. I could take you up to the broadcast booth. I think Mr. Rooney and Mr. Shannon would allow that to happen. We could show you around a little bit. I think they would probably want you to do another first pitch, so you'd have to consider that.
Oh, that would be a blast. I would love it.
Well, you keep in contact. This is a sincere offer, and we can execute that and make sure you're at a game having a good time. And I really appreciate coming on here, Sister Mary Jo, throwing the heat at the White Sox game over the weekend. Come see us in St. Louis soon.
Absolutely, we'll do. Well, I'll pray you into the playoffs. You're on a tear right now.
We are. Yes.
With your new manager.
That's right. Mike Schilt doing a good job, and it's a nice stretch right now. So keep those prayers coming, Sister Mary Jo.
Absolutely. God bless you. Thanks
God bless you too. 316 at KMOX.
KMOX stands for news.
Well, last week I did not spend a whole lot of time on the situation in Pennsylvania with the Catholic Church for no other reason than we just got kind of bogged down into some other issues, and then we had the roundtable on Friday. But I think it's interesting now that the Pope has issued a statement saying, very strongly worded, that the Catholic Church showed no care for the little ones. And he condemned the crimes of church leaders, and he also basically said, and this is, for me, it's always been the most stunning part of these allegations, that with shame and repentance, we acknowledge that as an ecclesial community that we were not where we should have been, that we did not act in a timely manner, realizing the magnitude and the gravity of the damage done to so many lives. Some of us have known this for a while. And you know what's interesting to me, and I'm not going to take any phone calls on this today, but I will tell you that I sat in this very chair 10 years ago talking about some of the revolting, disgusting, felonious criminal behavior by members of the Catholic Church and clergy. And I sat here and I took calls from people here in St. Louis, Catholics in St. Louis, somehow defending the church. I've always been blown away. This happened even when I was in Milwaukee too. Been blown away by the denial of people in the Catholic Church. And I know it's kind of painting with a broad brush, but if I said, and I did, by the way, some of the things that the Pope is saying now, I was castigated for. I was actually told in emails, you better be careful. This is, your career is on the line because this is a big Catholic community. How dare you say things like that? I would say, I'd flip it around. I'd say for those of you who in any way, shape, or form overlooked, defended this behavior in the past, didn't think it was serious, then you should be ashamed of yourself. And now this stuff is finally, decades later, in a sickening way, coming to light. I mean, if you read this report that was issued in Pennsylvania, it's borderline where I can't talk about some of the topics listed in that report on this radio station. That's how disgusting it is. And for it to go on for so many years, for so many victims, all under the cloak of being protected by God, I guess. I'm just stunned by that, really. So, you know, someone else who's been involved in this from the very beginning, and I think is more shocked than me, or maybe not because he's so used to the reactions, David Clossy from the Survivors Network of Abused Priests. David, how are you?
Doing well, Mark. Thanks for this opportunity.
Well, I had to come on and just go on my soapbox there, but this sort of reinvigorated some of the outrage that you've had and that others have shared over the years when it comes to some of this behavior from the past. So what was your reaction to that grand jury report and those details last week?
Well, I have to say I wasn't shocked. There have been about 10 or 11 similar grand jury reports, mostly on the local county level across the U.S. and any number of similar reports by governments overseas, and they all report the same conclusions, the same pattern of behavior, the same recklessness and callousness and deceit. There were, as you alluded, there were some particularly horrific individual abuse cases that just are, I mean, I get goosebumps as I think of them. The horror that some of those kids went through, but it is reassuring, though, to see Catholics more than ever now really being outraged, and we certainly hope that some of that outrage is translated into real action.
Why do you think it took so long for people, even given the facts of many cases? Let's look at Boston and John Gagan and that, you know, that whole situation where there was this willingness seemingly for folks to look past it and say, never mind, there's really nothing to see here. This is such a small minority. And I guess maybe I can understand it psychologically from this perspective, because people took it personally, like any kind of outrage that you might have from a member in the Catholic Church was directed at them. I don't know. I was always confused by the reactions of a lot of Catholics.
Yeah. Well, I think we all, every single one of us, our natural impulse is to turn away from horror, right? I mean, you see the ads on TV or in a magazine about kids, you know, in Africa with distended bellies who are starving, and we don't want to look at that. And I think it's even more true when it deals with an institution that so many people love and are a part of. But it's, you know, it's long since reached the point where there just no rational person can deny this. And I think, likewise, many, many Catholics just desperately wanted to believe when bishops said, we're fixing this. But what we all, I think, have to be reminded of constantly is the church is a monarchy. There are no checks and balances. This is a harsh word to use, but in essence, the Pope really is a dictator. And the 5,000 bishops across the world are really the dictators of their own diocese. They basically answer to no one, right? They have this position for life. People kneel before them and kiss their rings and call them your grace and your eminence. And so bishops, frankly, have no incentive to reform. They look around and they see other clerics who concealed abuse being promoted, which is what the grand jury found in Pennsylvania. And they look around and they see two bishops in America, two out of about 400 or 500 or 600 over the past 30 years. And only two bishops have been forced to resign because they ignored or hid child sex crimes. So history tells church officials that if you keep on doing what you've always been doing, you're still going to be a safe, welcome member of our little all-male hierarchy.
And you know as well as I do, if this behavior was exhibited in really in any other arena, there would be long prison sentences for hundreds of people.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. In the nonprofit world, in the for-profit world, in governments, no officials, no leaders could get by with this because there are checks and balances, right? Corporations have boards of directors and nonprofits have boards of directors. But again, if you're the Pope, you literally answer to no one. So you can get by time and time again talking about how sorry you are and how things are going to change and how appalling abuse is. But that's all it amounts to.
All right. So your recent column was it's time for a Me Too moment in the Catholic Church. What do you think should happen?
Well, I think every single Catholic should ask every other Catholic they know, hey, were you abused? Anybody in your family abused? And if the answer is yes, then the follow-up question should be, okay, let's clean up our church. Let's protect kids. How can I help you report this to police and prosecutors and journalists? Because it's those external sources that can put pressure on bishops and can help expose the truth. I think that secular authorities really need to step up to the plate. And prosecutors all across America need to convene grand juries, just like they did in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, unfortunately, in this situation, some of the victims and the witnesses are no longer alive. It's a complicated, very sad and sickening situation. David Klossy was the former executive director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
I wanted to share, because I didn't get into this, a couple of those details, because I think people should take time to look at this, and it's tough. So you have a priest in Greensburg who groomed middle school students for oral sex, telling them that Mary had to bite off the cord and lick Jesus clean after he was born. That's what the grand jury learned. They discovered a ring of predatory priests who would share information about their victims and were exchanging the victims amongst themselves. These were men of the cloth of God doing some of the most vile, disgusting behaviors that you could ever participate in. They produced child pornography. They used whips, sadism. They raped their victims. Priest in Frackville sexually abused a 14-year-old altar boy in the 1970s, dragged him across the floor by his underwear, beat him with a metal cross. In the Erie Diocese, a priest confessed to orally and anally raping 15 boys, some as young as 7 years old. When the bishop met with the abuser, he called the priest for a person of candor and sincerity and applauded him for the progress he had made in controlling his addiction. Now, that guy was finally removed from the priesthood years later, but think about that. Some of the priests would give their victims crosses, not as a grooming technique, but as a visible designation that these children were victims of sexual abuse. In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a priest allegedly abused five sisters from the same family. He collected samples of their urine, their pubic hair, and menstrual blood. One priest raped a 7-year-old girl while visiting her in the hospital after she had her tonsils removed. Another priest forced a 9-year-old boy to give him oral sex, then rinsed the boy's mouth out with holy water. And this goes on and on. And I'll stop there. But to think that these things were overlooked, again, all under the cloak of religion, is disgusting, beyond disgusting. 3:31, time for an AC checkup. Call Rhymes Heating and Cooling, rhymesheating.com. Sometimes I wish that people could see how stupid I am, although you hear me all the time. I heard dead air, and I looked at my producer and said, hey, what happened there? He goes, well, you're on right now. So there is that. I'll call it a case of the Mondays, if you will, ladies and gentlemen. We have an audio cut of the day, a good one, a good musical one that ties into a big news event last week. So we'll get to that here in just a few minutes. You know, it's restaurant week downtown, 3 courses, 15 restaurants, $25 and $35. The options, Jordan Eichenauer is helping promote downtown restaurant week. She's going to join me this afternoon at 4:20. Right now, I have William Roth in the studio. He's the founder of the St. Louis Actors Studio. We're going to run down some of the cool things happening at the St. Louis Actors Studio season at the Gaslight Theater. William, welcome to KMOX. I'll try to limit the amount of dead air during our segment, but I appreciate you coming in here. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I can fill dead air, man.
Well, that's what this is all about. So tell me what you guys, you know, this is embarrassing, so I'll just admit it. I've never really been over to see what you guys do. I am certainly a fan of entertainment, all things entertainment, live entertainment, shows on stage.
Right.
So for those people that have been remiss in their duties as, you know, fans of live theater and performances, explain the whole concept here.
Well, we have been, we're about to start our 12th season. So 12 years over.
What the hell am I doing? I've been back here for 12 years. There's something wrong with me, right?
Yeah, not anymore. Now we're going to sign you up.
This, right.
Yeah. And we have a little complex over there, between the West End Grill and Pub and the Gaslight Theater and the St. Louis Actors Studio. We built, this cocktails cuisine culture idea between the two. And so,
yeah, I'm familiar with it, and I can appreciate, you know, what you were doing. I just have never been over there to see it yet.
Yeah. So we have a full service restaurant and a full service theater. They both run independently of each other, but they're kind of both in the same, housed in the same building complex on Boyle, just a block and a half north of Lindell behind the cathedral. And so there's a 90, now we turned a storefront in an old turn-of-the-century building into a 99th Street seat storefront called the Gaslight Theater. And then I started the St. Louis Actors Studio to put content in there. And so we do 5 or 6 plays a year. We do a one-act play festival in the summer with the film writer and playwright Neil Labute comes in town. And
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
did you do that already?
We did it. It was this July.
Oh, now I really feel bad because he's kind of a suburban Chicago guy, right?
He is. Yeah, lives in New York now.
Barrington, Illinois, if I'm not mistaken.
Detroit, originally, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I was a fan of his, and I had no idea that he was involved in some of those things. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
he's partnered with us for 7 years now, and we've done some plays of his, and he writes world premiere one acts for us.
Bring him in the studio next year.
I'd be happy to do that. He's good for that, although he kind of hides from doing too much media, but he's up for it, for sure.
That's cool. All right, so that's sort of the concept, and you're you're running down the shows for this year. So when is the season specifically?
We go into rehearsal for our first play right after Labor Day. So the Lillian Hellman's, the American playwrights, she's her great play, The Little Foxes, is our first play. And that opens September 28th and runs through October 14th.
What is that about? I've heard of the show, but I don't know if I know the story.
So it's about Regina, who is a Southern woman, and her brothers. Her husband is suffering from an unknown heart illness in Baltimore. So he's away, and while he's away, she and her brothers are scheming to invest in a business opportunity, and they need his money to seal the deal. So she calls him back from his treatments in Baltimore. And they've never quite got along. She married him for his money to begin with. So they scheme to take his money from him, and just this family feud of backstabbing and intrigue within this family ensues. I don't want to give the ending away, but it's great. It was just on Broadway. Laura Linney and Cynthia Nixon were just in it. And they actually, there's two leading women in the play, and they switch the roles every night. In New York, we're not doing that. But that
had to be difficult. Although,
yeah, kind of learning two full parts. You know,
it'd be fun to go see those shows back to back and see how each actress sort of approached. I'm sure some people did that.
Yeah, for sure. And in their promotional video, they showed identical scenes with the both of them. It's fun. It's still on YouTube.
You should
find
that here.
We should. It's tough on the actresses, though. But
no, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So that's show number one, Little Foxes.
Right. That's first. And then we're doing a great play that I saw at Steppenwolf a handful of years ago called Tribes by Nina Rain. And that runs November 30th through December 16th. And this is an interesting British play, comedy drama that has, you know, your usual things that you would find within a family drama in a British play. But you put on top of that the son in the family who was born deaf. Raised by this upper middle class family, they didn't want him to feel differently than anyone else in the community, so they didn't teach him to sign. They just taught him to lip read. He falls in love with a woman who is losing her hearing. She introduces him to the deaf community and those that sign. You this family dynamic play of the of, like I said, you got the regular family issues. You then have a deaf son that learns, hey, why didn't you introduce me to this whole community of deaf people? I feel as though I've lost half of my identity. And then on top of that, you find that there is this rift in the deaf community between those that sign and those that don't. And so it's really interesting.
Lots of dynamics there.
Right. And we have a deaf actor coming in from Oregon to play the lead, and it's going to be a great, and it's funny and touching. It's really quite a play.
How many, and then we got some stuff going into next year as well. In fact, you have a local playwright, Bo Williams, not to be confused, right, with Bo Williman.
No, it is Bo Williman.
Oh, it is. Okay. Okay. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah, Bo Williman. Yep. We're doing his play, Farragut North, which is actually next. And that was made into the movie with George Clooney called Ides of March.
So he is, of course, the guy behind House of Cards.
That's right. And a John Burroughs grad in St. Louis.
He's a Burroughs guy, too.
Yep. And there's a chance that he may be around for opening night, so those that get secure tickets have a chance to meet Bo.
Right, and then you wrap up with a Sam Shepard story, True West, in April. So lots of opportunities for people to get in and see these shows.
That's right, and then we're back at it with the Lubute Festival again in July.
That's awesome, right? For folks interested in getting in there, how many seats do you have in this theater?
98.
That's awesome, isn't it? Just that intimate theater perspective. I took my son to New York a few weeks ago to see a couple of Broadway shows. And, you know, I love the Fox. I love the Peabody. Don't get me wrong. But even though in Broadway, there's not necessarily the 98-seat theaters, in many of those theaters, I went to the Vivian Beaumont to see My Fair Lady with another St. Louis guy,
right.
Norbert Leo Butz. And
right.
There's not a bad seat in that whole place at all.
Nor in ours. We've got 70 seats down and we have a little 30 seat balcony and you are right on top of the action and the acoustics are great. We never have to mic the actors. It is, you are right in the middle of things.
You know, that brings up something. When I saw Kinky Boots in New York too, and I had never seen this before because they were trying to create the best sound from the actors. They put the microphones on top of their heads, like coming out of their forehead. And I was close enough to see that.
Right.
And I'm guessing the people further back couldn't really notice it. But David Cook, who is the guy that was on American Idol, and he's starring in that show in Kinky Boots now, which, by the way, was fantastic. I'd never seen it before.
Yeah,
loved
it's it. Something.
It was great.
It's come to town a few
But I
times.
Was distracted by the microphones in the middle of the forehead. That was weird. But when you can have that intimacy, it's even better.
That's for sure. Yeah, we don't need to mic anybody.
That's great. All right, well, congratulations with some great, you know, shows coming up here. And what's the website for folks who might want to get involved?
STLAS.org.
I'm coming to see the first show because I do like live. I don't see enough live theater, period.
There's a lot here.
I know. It's shameful. It's just a time thing.
Right.
I use my 3-year-old as an excuse.
That's not a good enough excuse.
It's not really.
No, you can set your 3-year-old at the bar and come see the play and pick
him
up.
Well, we
after.
Got babysitters, so that's not the worst thing. We'll get out there for sure. William, thanks. Great. I'm going to hold you to the Neil LaBute thing. In the Company of Men and Nurse Betty, if for those people not familiar with it. In the Company
Shape
of Men
things.
Is a brilliant movie. Yeah,
yep.
Great stuff. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. 3:45, we have an audio cut of the day. Coming up next, right into Total Information PM with Traffic's Roger standing by as well. All right, thank you, Roger. I'll get to audio cut of the day here in just a couple of minutes. Let me go back to last Thursday. This was something that I didn't play from Larry Kudlow, who is the chief economic advisor for the president, talking about all the positive things. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I was in Columbia, or north of Columbia, near Harrisburg with my little brother from Big Brother's Big Sisters and doing some fishing with my my buddy Kevin Yeager, who is a big, big Trump supporter. He was a Trump supporter from the beginning, and I had him on the day after the election because he was one of the guys that kept saying, oh, he's going to win. He loved what he was about because, again, now, just keeping some perspective on this, I was a never Trumper. I'm not a fan of the president's personality, but I still can recognize, and Ted Nugent said this a couple of weeks ago, there were people in this country that got sick and tired of business as usual. They don't care about stupid tweets and sophomoric behavior. We've seen this time and time again. What they care about is their 401ks, their retirement savings, jobs, putting their kids through college. So Larry Kudlow, who used to be on TV, he's the director of the National Economic Council under the president and has been since he took office, talked about these amazing numbers last week.
Confidence numbers, large businesses, small businesses, and consumer confidence numbers are at or near record highs, and from the latest surveys are continuing to rise. There's no let up in the increase. And confidence is everything. Confidence is everything. Now, I can run down a litany. I'm not going to take up your time. I'm just saying the really wonderful part of the story for me, you know, I get off on this stuff. I understand that. But it's very important for the country, Americans, workforce. The new numbers coming in, retail sales, industrial production, low inflation, a rock steady dollar.
You know, if you had numbers like this, and I've said this many times, and President Obama was in office or Hillary Clinton, it'd be on the front page of the paper every day. Robust economy, booming economy. What an amazing recovery. None of that here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And it is sponsored by the Good Feet Store this afternoon, although I think I threw away my copy. Here we go. The Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. This is Chris Stapleton, who was just here in St. Louis about a month ago. Great show at Verizon Wireless or Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Still harkening back to Verizon Wireless. He decided to do a cover song.
I was told earlier today, but from 1968, Aretha Franklin opened this building. She is the greatest singer that ever lived. And my all-time favorite, so I would never presume to sing an Aretha Franklin song, but in tribute to her tonight, I'll give it my best shot. Take me to heart, and I always love you.
He's doing the hit from 1967, Do Right Woman, Do Right Man, in L.A. at the Forum.
Take me to
tribute by Chris Stapleton and an amazing version of a song that he sounded even a little hesitant to cover from 1967. We'll leave this. We'll go out with it. It's our audio cut of the day on KMOX. Total Information PM coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.